Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary
with Professor Jennifer Curtin. Kia ora, Jennifer. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you.
We're long into this lockdown now, and I do want to talk about the government's announcements on Monday and what the three-phased plan means and will mean in the future. But let's start with something that is not COVID-related, because I think we all need a bit of a palate cleanser every now and then. And this is an important bit of change to our sort of electoral system, or potentially change to our electoral system. We're seeing a review of how it sort of works in New Zealand. Can you explain a little bit about what's going on here, Jennifer?
Yeah, this is the government's announced, I think the day before yesterday, this quite wide-ranging review, actually. So we had an independent review of MMP back in 2012,
mm-hmm.
and that panel of experts recommended a range of changes, including getting rid of the one-seat threshold, which is the sort of Epsom thing that we see happening, and also reducing the party threshold to 4% of the vote to win seats. But what ended up happening at that time, Judith Collins was Justice Minister, and it took quite a while for the government of the day to decide what to do with that report, and they chose to do nothing, so just leave everything exactly the same. So here we are, like 9 years on, and the current government's decided to have another look at a bunch of things, not just the recommendations from the 2012 report, but also whether or not we should have four-year terms rather than three-year terms, whether we should lower the voting age to 16,
mm-hmm.
How we manage overseas voting, how political parties should be funded, and those other things like the one-seat rule and the overhang rule and so on. So not everything will, if they make a decision using these experts to make some changes, not all of these changes will happen at the same time. The other really important one is the Māori electorate option, so being able to shift between the Māori seats
mm-hmm.
and the general seats. For Māori at the moment, this can only happen every 5 years, and it's a really short window of time, and there are a lot of Māori in the community and academics who are arguing it should be more flexible than that, so that will also be on the table.
So it could potentially be some very significant changes in terms of what it means for our voting demographic, for example. I think it's very interesting that we're seeing the voting age being lowered to 16 is something that is tabled in this place as well. What do you suspect we might see from this review? Do you have any sort of anticipation of what could come out of this?
Well, I think we've seen the discussion about lowering the voting age to 16, but also attaching a civics education program to that. We've seen this discussed before because once upon a time, Sue Bradford, when she was a Greens MP, brought a private members bill on this topic. So we have been here before, and there are a lot of people who are really knowledgeable about this. So I think we'll have a really robust discussion about the voting age. We know that post-millennials are, you know, really highly educated compared to previous generations, and also very politically engaged, and would like, many of them would like to see an opportunity to participate in decisions about their future. I think the government and a number of the opposition parties are very keen, actually, on the four-year term. They feel that there isn't sort of, you know, you're kind of in the honeymoon period,
mm-hmm.
then you get a year to do good policy work. You don't really get enough time to see the implementation of that work before you're going to an election again. So we might see that emerge as sort of a referendum option going forward. And I do think we'll see some movement on the Māori electoral option. Whether or not the government or the parties decide that they want to see some change to the one-seat threshold, we know ACT is not keen on that idea. No surprise there.
Do you want to just explain a little bit about what the one-seat threshold is? Because it is quite, I think it is interesting how ACT does seem to be a party that benefits from that position.
Yeah. Well, they have historically, this time around, they got enough of the vote to get on their own right. But once upon a time when we shifted to MMP, one of the, in order to increase the diversity of parliament, there was, and it was mimicking the German system to some extent, was the idea that in addition to having this 5% threshold for party vote that you had to get, if you won an electorate seat, you, in addition to taking up a place in the parliament, the party that had won that seat, even if they got less than 5% of the vote, could get that percentage of the seat.
Right.
So, for example, if you won an electorate seat and only got 2% of the vote, then instead of just having one MP, you would end up with two or three MPs, depending on the percentage. So that's actually how the Māori Party ended up with two MPs this time. They won a Māori seat, but they got 1.2, 1.3% of the vote, which allowed Debbie to come in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a, considered a coattail provision. I think what the last 2012 review talked about was really the only winning one seat and being able to have this coattail provision is a little bit, has been played by the political parties. You know, there's a lot of trade-off, and it gives unfair influence to voters in one particular electorate. So they recommended getting rid of it because of that way it has ended up being utilised.
Well, it'll be definitely very interesting to see what comes from this review, and we'll come and touch back on it later down the track. But let's talk briefly about what we heard announced from the government on Monday about this three-stage sort of plan to move us away from the lockdown that we're currently in Tāmaki Makaurau. And this has sparked a lot of political debate, unsurprisingly. We've seen quite a bit of pushback from the Greens and some reservations from the Māori Party, particularly about low vaccination rates in Māori demographic at the moment. But also we have seen, like a mixed bag across the board. What are some of your, I guess, takings from the political responses we've seen to the government's announcement?
Yeah, I think it was a really challenging decision for the government. I think that there has been, John Tamahere's been really grumpy at the government for not being more proactive in the ways in which they can share data to enable Waipariwa Trust find the Māori communities and get their vaccinations out through their buses and campervans and so on to those groups that otherwise would find it difficult to go and get the vaccination, because really the majority of vaccination is happening when people have to get to a vaccination clinic, mm-hmm. or a pharmacy or whatever. So it is challenging, and similarly we know that, so we're seeing really unfortunate figures around like low vaccination rates amongst Māori, but also the new cases that are emerging are much more likely to appear in Māori communities. So the government hasn't done enough to support Māori health providers and others to get that vaccination rollout happening in marginalised communities. And so shifting in this stepwise, this one step, two step, three step, is seen as irresponsible by some, you know, who are the voice of those communities, and it's a fair comment. But similarly, we're seeing criticism from some in the business community who feel that it hasn't gone far enough because certain elements of the hospitality industry still can't open. So, you know, they're in a bit of a rock and a hard place, because there was a general sentiment being expressed through media channels that Aucklanders were becoming really tired of a strict level three. And I do think, like talking to some of my students that who live alone, that this opportunity to say go over the bridge and stand in the driveway and see their mum and dad, or connect with another, you know, their family or friends in the way that's allowed under step one, is a great relief to them, because this lockdown has been much longer than previous ones.
Do you think that we might see perhaps more political consensus if we do see a rapid uptake in vaccination or a very sharp push in the vaccination rollout over these next couple of weeks?
Well, I think that's vital, obviously. So Auckland's yesterday made, I think, 85% one vaccination. I think there, you know, we shouldn't see 90% of the target. Ideally, we'd be wanting to get to 100% of those 12 over. I think that the challenge will also be ensuring that those who get their first vax go and get their second vax, because we know that the outbreak of Delta really stimulated a rush on getting the vaccine, but whether or not that momentum holds, there's still work to be done there. I think we're also seeing now other ways of doing testing, like saliva testing is really being, because I'm pretty sure a lot of people are a bit ambivalent about, oh, I've only got a cold, but I have to go and have something stuck right up my nose again, whereas, you know, something a little easier and more frequent might enable us to sort of manage those breakouts a little bit better.
It will be interesting to see. I think there's a big announcement from the government later today around what rigorous testing in the community might look like going forward. So that will be certainly quite interesting to follow. But thank you very much for your time this morning, Jennifer. It's always great to have you on the show, Professor Jennifer Curtin. And we'll talk to you again in a few weeks. So take care.
Yeah. Have a good one. Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary from Professor